from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in September of 2016 in the town of Pittsford. In the middle of the night, a man left flyers in driveways and outside homes. And those flyers, do you remember them? They asked residents to help make Rochester great again by promoting the European white race and advocating for more white racial consciousness. The flyer shook up the entire Greater Rochester community. In response, community members created an organization called Pitts Forward, designed to be grassroots, nonpartisan, and aimed at making their town more inclusive and accessible for everyone. 1 year after the racist flyers, Pittsford elected its first African-American town board member. Councilman Kevin Beckford is a member of Pitts Forward, and while he has long cared about his civic duty, he told the Democrat and Chronicle that the racist flyers were a shove off the cliff for his political aspirations. Beckford has served his first year, and the town of Pittsford has a lot going on in the weeks to come. We asked him to join us to discuss how he has seen the work of Pitts Forward evolving and how his work in government has gone in the first year. So, Councilman Kevin Beckford, member of the Pittsford Town Board, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us is Kendra Evans, a founding member of Pitts Forward. Welcome to you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having us today.
There is a lot to discuss, and I want to tell our listeners, Kevin's actually doing a lot of work kind of letting community know in various quarters. What's going on in Pittsford when it comes to MLK events and other community events. You're going to hear him with Beth Adams next week in a conversation on Morning Edition. But this is a chance for us to kind of talk about those events and a sort of a broad spectrum look at the work of Pitts Forward, the work of the town. So I guess I'm just going to start with this, Councilman. How'd the first year go? How do you feel?
Short answer is perfect.
Perfect. Nobody feels perfect.
So that, the little longer answer is that, you know, going into this, not serving on any town board before, in this kind of capacity, I didn't have any expectations, and I was a little bit nervous because I've never done this before. There was a lot I had to learn, and so I just used a lot of the tactics I use in business. That when I went into transition a group that I didn't know or have the content for that area, I just built the best possible relationship that allowed me, while I was learning, to be effective. And so I actually started before I got sworn in January. I met with Bill Smith in December, the town supervisor. And to kind of set the tone, I outlined my four-year plan. It's a four-year term. And that the first year was going to be things that would be very easy to find common ground. And I use the example that there's no partisan pothole. You know, it's just a pothole that needs to be filled. And so, and also made it really clear that the election was over and that it was really important for us to figure out how can we collectively serve a more diverse Pittsford resident base, which was much more now representative on our town board than it's been before. And that set the tone.
By the way, I have found the supervisor to be very accessible over the years in his various capacities in government. He's been on this program a number of times. Did you find it that way when you joined the town board?
Absolutely. In fact, he was receptive to my idea. And what that translated into is monthly meetings with the town supervisor, usually 2 to 3 days. As soon as the board material was available and uploaded online, I had scheduled meetings with him most of last year. So we'd meet twice a month, sometimes more than that if we needed to do any follow-up. And we would go through every single agenda item so that if there were any legislation-type issues or procedural issues that were new to me, it helped me to understand that before we got to the point where we had to vote on it so I could serve the residents well. And then what I did is also shared that. So at the board meeting, I would, you know, sort of recognize him for giving me that kind of access. That, you know, typically some of the folks were sort of worried that, you know, hey, we have two parties on the town board. Is there going to be chaos? Like what maybe things that they're seeing on a national level? And because I set the tone before I got sworn in, that was my interest was to serve. You know, my whole campaign was based on putting the service back in the public servant. And so I wanted to make sure it was clear that we were not going to be looking at problems through a partisan lens. And he was receptive to that and in fact gave me quite a bit of time before each board meeting. And it helped me to, I think, help to influence him a little bit in terms of his approach towards problems, as well as he was able to help influence me.
All right. So this hour, it's a great opportunity for us to hear how this organization and how the town is addressing some of the issues that I think both Kendra and Kevin have seen, not just going all the way back to September of 2016, which probably feels like a decade ago now, given all the work that's been done. But I think this is sort of the story of a lot of local suburbs. It's not just a story of Pittsford. It's a question of how and whether our towns are accessible, are growing, and what progress looks and feels like for people who live there, for people who work there, for people who visit there. Kendra, does it feel like, you know, 10 years ago, September 2016? I mean, it's been a lot of work and a lot happened since that time.
It's been a great deal of work since that time. And I think what's most exciting to me is how this grassroots movement has continued to affect change in our town. I do think the best way to affect change is through elected office. And the fact that this grassroots movement has helped to put a change agent into town, into town board, is something that everyone in our town entirety should be proud of. What we've worked to do is to not really follow the method for other organizations. For a time, we were considering becoming an official 501c3, becoming an official place. Like, we were going to be the movement. We were going to be the organization where all of this happened. And through multiple discussions, and actually it was triggered in my thought process based on your show yesterday about Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Your Harry Potter show yesterday about the folly of Harry Potter and how he felt he had to be the hero.
To do everything, yeah.
And by being the hero, he put people in danger. Pitts Forward is not the hero. Pitts Forward was the canary in the coal mine and brought all of us together and was able to affect change on the town board with Kevin Beckford and Stephanie Townsend coming on, who were both very contributing members to Pitts Forward. We now, when we first started a decade ago in 2016 with how this feels, the school systems, for example, everybody's well-intentioned but didn't really realize the root of the problem and how deep the wounds ran. We now have an inclusivity advisory committee that was set forth by Superintendent Pirro and the school board to have an advisory committee to talk about all forms of diversity in our town and how do we create equity, access, and belonging for every student. Whether you're neurodiverse, whether your race makes you in the minority, whether you're not able-bodied, all different types of diversity is now being purposefully addressed and discussed in the systems that are in place. The PTSA as well has developed its own committee. So while it seems like it's more, maybe these things go under the term of bureaucracy, what's different is that these are systems that are changing. And for systems to change, you have to admit that there's system level difficulties. And so change is slow, but these are some very big steps that can affect positive change for years to come.
You're not a 501c3.
Not yet.
Not going to be?
I think we're pausing on that because, honestly, this is something we could be the organization that's supposed to fix things. But the truth is that what we are is we are a group of social justice advocates. We are a group of people that are pushing ourselves into every different community, whether it's the PTSA or the Rotary Club or into partisan activities. This is definitely a group where like-minded people can come together around nonpartisan issues. Our town, we are very, very good at those nonpartisan issues. Our leaf collection is top of the line. So are our public libraries. So are our potholes being filled. We have a great DPW. The nonpartisan issues, in my opinion, the nonpartisan issues of sustainability, accessibility, equity for all, opportunity, and a sense of belonging where everybody belongs here, not just those who look the part or have the money to play the part, but everybody. Those are the nonpartisan issues, in my opinion, that really need to be addressed by all, and we're changing the system so that they are.
All right, so listeners, I already have a little bit of feedback. In fact, I'm going to jump right in a moment with a question from Pete Nabosny from the Children's Agenda, who's got a question for Kevin from the town board perspective. But if you want to do that, we're talking about what progress looks like in Pittsford, but this probably is a question in all communities. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. So Kevin, Pete Nabosny with the Children's Agenda sends this note. He says, I'd love to hear about whether Pitts Forward or the town will push for things like multifamily zoning to increase socioeconomic and racial diversity in Pittsford. It's kind of hard to build a more inclusive community if low-income folks have nowhere to live in town.
That's a great question. So you'll be, is it Pete?
Pete.
So Pete, you'll be happy to know that one of the things that most towns do every 10 years is they update their comprehensive town plan. And so we are currently in the process of doing that. In fact, if you could come out, we have a meeting on January 28th to review a draft of that plan that's been worked on the last 2 years. And that's, in fact, my meetings I just mentioned that I had with Bill Smith this year, one of the agenda items, when we were done preparing for the agenda, a number of our meetings we dedicated to looking at this comp plan and how it was evolving. Because I was not on the initial committee that put it together, it was really important to me that this plan would reflect things like being more welcoming, more inclusive, more diverse, that we wanted to have an emphasis around building a sense of community, social justice, connectedness, and how can we do that. And so we have some very specific actions that I'll be recommending when we get to that meeting on the 28th. That, and one of them is around having or zoning laws at some point for the, and again, we don't have a lot of undeveloped land that's left, so this is one of the challenges we have. But we're looking to, and Bill Smith actually talked about this on Evan's show a few months ago, about increasing density, having more cluster-type homes. Mm-hmm. And so that eventually will lead to a lower cost per home, and also allow for closer communities. Instead of having a house on an acre, and you have so many houses on that street, they end up having a much higher cost per house because of the fact that the developers need to make money on that house. And so I believe that eventually we will see that, because, in fact, what we'll need to do is, the folks that are listening here that are in Pittsford, if this is important to you, please come out, make your voices heard, because ultimately when we go to vote on that plan, it's going to be based on the feedback from the residents, and you can't have diversity if you don't have access.
Okay, so on this subject, I want to push a little bit here, because I'm already hearing from other listeners. Don's writing to us saying, are you planning to open any low-income or mixed developments, and are you already getting pushback from residents? Before we get to those specific questions,
right.
And I think really this is a question for both of our guests this hour. Pittsford, whether you like it or not, has a reputation as certain things. Mostly white, mostly wealthy, you know, excellent schools, probably a little bit exclusive. Again, fair or not. And I don't know, is that unfair? Is, at least reputationally, do you agree that in our region, when people hear Pittsford, that's one of the things, those are some of the things they think about?
I think that's a fair critique, because it actually tied to fact, right?
Okay.
So if you look at, when I say fact, meaning that the numbers really, you know, indicate that we are not as diverse in terms of a high percentage of white residents, and not as high of a percentage of African-American Hispanics. But we do have some diversity moving into Pittsford, and Asian and Middle Eastern, but we don't see as many African-American Hispanics, and I think that's tied to systemic issues we have in Monroe County.
Okay, so the question for both of you then is, do you want Pittsford to change in that? Do you want to see more low-income residents in your town? Do you think most of your town wants the same thing? I'll start with the councilman. Go ahead.
So I think that there's a diversity of thought out there. So I'll be very frank with you that, you know, one of the pushbacks that I got when I was on the campaign, I talked about having more socioeconomic diversity in our neighborhoods. And what that translated into is having different size and price homes. So you can have folks that are living there that have different types of income, and as opposed to neighbors that are exclusively high-end $500,000+ homes, that really indirectly says you need to make over $200,000. But when you look at who makes that kind of income, it's not as diverse in Monroe County. And so I think there's certainly folks out there that are uncomfortable about it, they're nervous. And the reason why they're nervous, sadly, is because we are so segregated in Monroe County. There are folks that do not have any direct lived experience with people of color. None at all. And then other than what they see on the news or what they see in the newspaper. And so they have this sort of fear that's on a subconscious level that's affecting their judgment and when they talk about these things. And so I love actually having the conversation. In fact, one of the reasons I love your show is that you're committed to having those conversations continue to explore what's going on at the subconscious level. So what I believe will happen, first of all, a crisp answer to the first question, is there a plan in place to bring in low-income housing? No, there's no plan in place today around that, because the way it works is that a developer buys the land. Most of our land is actually already bought by the developers. They have to bring projects to bear to address the needs that they believe exist. The reason I mentioned earlier around the comprehensive business plan is because our gatekeeper for that change is having zoning laws that says, first of all, a value statement in our comp plan that says, we want to support more socioeconomic neighborhoods. Translation, you then have an action list after that statement that says, how do you plan to achieve that? One of them is to having our zoning laws support clustered homes, higher density homes, which indirectly means lower cost homes. So that actually indirectly gets at the need of having folks in the lower end of the economic strata that can afford to live in Pittsford. And here's why that's so important. We do have a good school system, but there's two parts. There's two parts to our school system. If you look at graduation rates, you'll say we're great. If you look at the type of programs we have for our kids, it's a reason to move there. But as a person of color, a parent of color, or a white parent, what you have to also look at is that our school system today is devoid of any African American or Hispanic teachers, aides, administrators. So therefore, our kids, my daughter, I have one child, is going to potentially, when she graduates from the 12th grade and she's currently in the 8th grade, may never have seen an African-American or Hispanic person in any of those roles. And so why that's important is because it influences them on a subconscious level. And so in the future, you know, we're going to have a much more diverse world to work with. So if our kids actually grow up not seeing that, it affects how they see people in those roles. And, you know, on the business world, when I run into employees that have gone through the experience I just described, they don't see African Americans in senior leadership roles like myself is legitimate. They think we're a unicorn. Like, how is it possible you could be this person in this role with this level of responsibility? Because their entire life has been devoid of seeing me in that. And so that's why it's important, not just for me as a parent of color, but for every parent that wants their child to have a real world experience.
Okay. Kendra, we'll go back to sort of the same kind of questions. Does your town want more diversity in income, in availability for access to people to move there from different incomes and backgrounds? And do you think that would happen?
I want to take it back one step further.
Sure.
Where you talked about our reputation.
Yeah.
And I think that's 100% true. In the athletic circles that my children travel in, it means something if you can beat Pittsford. It definitely is something that's out there. And in terms of social justice, it's definitely the concept that if I cared, I'd live in the city. That's where the change could happen. And I'd like to give a little pushback on that. And Pittsford is predominantly white. This new comp plan that we're going to be discussing on January 28th lists that we're 88% white. The people who look like me, who talk like me, who dress like me, who are me, need to learn how that difference is not a deficit, it's not a barrier. And I think that what we as a town are doing, we're a bunch of very well-meaning people, but we don't have the education. We don't have the representation. I could speak on that all day long. There are steps that need to be in place so that these code changes can become a reality for our town, because it doesn't, there's a fear. There's a fear of bringing in low-income housing. I think that's a definite sentiment in our town. Is that justified? Where's the education around that? If you don't have a lived experience, a shared experience of what it meant to be poor, which I have grown up, we had a time where we were very poor as a child. That didn't make me dangerous. That didn't mean that I was a liability to my community. In fact, if you look at statistics, and I won't quote them because they won't be cited perfectly, people without the means tend to donate more of their percentage income. This is all education, and this is the groundwork that grassroots organizations need to lead so that we can put elected officials in positions to be successful. That what's going to be coming down the road through this comprehensive plan, through our vision statement, this isn't something that should be scary to you. This is something that makes our town stronger. So yes, we do have a reputation, but we are doing the work to make the changes to get there.
Okay. And I guess the follow-up to that is your sentiment is reflected by many people who want to be part of efforts like Pitch Forward. How common, though, do you think it is? In other words, let's just say we could sort of move zoning and all of the different technical aspects of housing projects, and you had a developer and they had a plan, and we're talking low income tomorrow, and you had a town meeting. Kendra, how many people would show up and say, not in our town, no way, that's not us, that's not what Pittsford's supposed to be?
How many people would show
Would it be a lot? Would it be the majority?
I think people would show up. I think it would be a conversation that would be wonderful for us to all have. And I think that it would be great if we actually had a forum where those kinds of conversations could happen in terms of problem solving and not that opinion versus the Pitts Forward opinion, the concept that we are better together. We are stronger together. I think that there's definitely some people in our town. Would I say that they're the majority? I don't think they're the majority anymore, especially when you can sit in small groups, when you can talk to them about what does low-income housing mean? Low-income housing means that when I'm ready to retire, I can still stay here because I don't have a $25,000 tax bill anymore. Low income means that when my family member is afflicted with cancer and is now on disability, that she can't be discriminated against based on her housing. These are the areas that people don't understand. There are so many stereotypes because of lack of representation that lead us to believe that low income housing is bad for us. Low income housing is a way to take care of us. If I get sick, do you want me to leave our community? I don't think that you do. If, when I get older, do you want those people, those leaders of our community to have to leave? No. And that's part of this low income conversation, is that there should be options for people of different means, different abilities, different everything, that can still be welcome and have a solid seat at the table.
So is low income housing one of the next frontiers in your town?
I'll let the councilman talk about that, I suppose.
So I should clarify a little bit, too, because this is really important, because what I've learned over the last year is that there are certain sort of buzzwords that sort of invoke a feeling. I think the broader conversation around why do we conflate low income with what would be considered maybe issues, right? I'm similar to Kendra. I came to this country at 18 with a suitcase and clothes. That was it. And I was able to contribute and make a difference, and I am here today at 54. So I think that, unfortunately, because of the narratives that we see in the news and in media and in TV shows, it has conflated, first of all, low income with race, and then also, by the way, with crime or other social ills. And I think that's the broader conversation, Evan, that needs to happen. And so in Pittsburgh, because of the limited land that we have and the price of that land, in fact, when I was looking to buy a house last year, we were thinking about building. I could not find a half acre of land that was below $80,000. So we ended up just buying a house because it didn't make sense. So if I bought that land and built on it, even if we tried taking that approach with a modest home, we would be at $300,000. So there's the low-income housing, the way we see in maybe other subdivisions, is not as possible the way it exists today. But keep in mind that our home prices today, unfettered access to developers, without any of the things we're talking about right now, they're coming with houses that are 1,700 square feet, which sounds good, but they're $500,000.
So $500,000 for 1,700 square feet?
You got it. Now, so keep in mind now that, because it's on a 1 acre lot or, you know, has all of these whistles and bells in it, but the bottom line is that the profit margin for those homes are so high for developers, and there's a market for it. Not a great market, but there's somewhat of a market for it. So here's what's happening. The people that have spent 30 years here that are retiring, that would like to downsize, they can't, because they're saying it's better for me to keep my 3,000 square foot home. Because if I try to downsize, I'll be paying more. And so there's an issue for people wanting to age in place. There's an issue for young families moving in that would like to, that are, you know, if you have two people making $50,000 a piece or $100,000 or $75,000 a piece, $125,000, $130,000, we should have a housing market to meet that need. So the idea of having, so when we talk about low-income housing, it's we need to have housing that speaks to the diversity of the income spectrum, right? And so I think there's two different needs. One is around, we've been, without having a plan, we ultimately ended up with a plan that created more exclusion. And so there's two parts to this from my view. There's a business part to this that says, why is it that in 2019 now, that we have so few people of color and specifically underrepresented minority groups, African-American, Hispanics, that are not making over 80, 90, 100,000? That's actually a systemic institutional issue. So that needs to be addressed. And quite frankly, that's the responsibility of all of the top 10 employers in Rochester. The second part is when you are making that income, where do you live? Now, you could live anywhere you want to be. So it shouldn't be the goal that if you make $100,000, you move to Pittsburgh or Brighton. You might want to live right where you want to live. But then it makes you have more money to invest into that area. Or if you decide to go to Pittsburgh, you can. And so to me, we were indirectly, in that second step I mentioned, we were creating an infrastructure that would perpetuate us never being more diverse by actually allowing that to happen. That's probably one of the most toughest discussions I had with Bill Smith, that in the beginning when we first started talking through it, I said, do you realize that when those white supremacist flyers were dropped, that they had no idea what they were doing. Because you know why? If they hadn't dropped those flyers, none of this would have happened. I would have not run for office because I would not have gotten involved because I didn't realize what was going on. I wasn't in tune with the fact that we had to do all this work. That if they had done nothing and slept in their bed that night, their plan was actually being accomplished because we didn't have a plan to counter it. So by them actually dropping those flyers, that's led to folks like Stephanie and I being on the board, changing the conversation, reframing it to say, we can't just say we want to be more diverse and inclusive. We got to do the work. And the work translates very specifically into how do our zoning laws create the environment so developers come in and build what we want. Because it's our town. The developers build a house and they leave. We have to decide who do we want to be when we grow up. And if we want to be a town that is more welcoming, inclusive, and diverse, how do we make that happen? Our laws need to dictate, first of all, we need to have a value statement that says who do we want to be. And then that leads to an action plan and zoning laws that make sure it's possible. Therefore, when developers come in, they're going to come in and say, well, I know I'm going to get a no from this town board if I don't come in with socioeconomic diversity in homes, if I don't come in with amenities like a playground, a grill, and a pavilion so that the people can get to know each other and break down social barriers. If I don't come in with that plan, they're going to tell me no, and I can't take them to court. You know why? Because it's in their laws. That's actually the work we need to do on the board right now to say, we are usually very good at getting the words right. And this, when I say we as a nation, not picking on our town, I love my town. That's actually why I'm doing what I'm doing. But here's what I need to do. When you love something, you challenge it to be better. And so I love the school system. That's why I moved there. But as I get closer to it, I realize, oh my gosh, it has a good education, but I need to look for my partners that are working in the school system to challenge themselves to have a more diverse workforce to change the things that I mentioned. And then on the town board, how do we make sure we're setting the tone on these social issues that need to be changed?
All right, so real briefly to make sure we kind of put a button on this because we're going to move forward in just a second. I've got more of your feedback. Phone's ringing. 844-295-TALK. We're having an outstanding conversation, I think, that really peels back some of what's happening and what would be required to make real change in communities like Pittsford, whereas I think Kevin and Kendra have said the status quo is hard to move sometimes. Not even intentionally. That's just the way things get entrenched in the way communities and societies structure themselves. So when it comes to those zoning laws, put a button on this for our listeners who've been kind of listening, wondering, but wait, has anything changed? Or in the next year, is it possible to see a change there?
So process-wise, we have the meeting on the 20th of January. We'll get feedback from the public. We'll also hear feedback from the board members. And then after that, we'll make edits, provide a presentation one more time, and then we vote on it. As soon as that's voted on as being in place, that initiates a step for having a law firm start working on our zoning laws to say, in some cases, a statement of action. We just do it. And in some cases, we need to make sure we have legislation to provide protection around that. So I believe my hope is, and Bill would be able to tell me this definitively, because timing on this sometimes takes a while, by mid-year next year, we should have zoning law changes. Mid-year this year, I forget, we're in 2019, changes that would support clustered homes and more higher density in homes that will make it easier for the remaining land to be built the way I just mentioned.
All right, so we'll be covering that at the end of this month. So let's get our only break and come back to your phone calls. And before the hour's up, I just want to say I've got papers here. I've got pieces of paper that have like a list of all the things that Kevin has been working on the town board in 2018 and is looking forward to. And I promise I'm going to give you a chance to just kind of rattle them off if you want, because that was part of what we talked about. Every one of these, though, as you can see, could become its own hour. That's what's actually happening right now as we talk about zoning.
I'll be happy to come back.
I appreciate that. And Kendra, before we go to that break, why don't you tell our listeners, if people want to learn more and engage with Pitch Forward, where to go?
If people want to learn more about Pitch Forward, we have a website, pittsforward.com. We're also on Facebook. And there's email, pittsforward@gmail.com.
Okay, so Kendra is a founding member of Pitch Forward. Kevin Beckford, a councilman who's a member of the Pittsford Town Board. Let's get that break, and we're back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, Bird Box is one of the most popular films in the country, and it's one of Netflix's biggest hits ever. We're going to talk about not just the film. We'll talk about the issues that some in the mental health advocacy community have with the film. There's a lot in the film about suicide, about mental illness. We'll discuss it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. Let's go ahead and get some of your feedback, and Bernard in Fairport's first. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I just have a question. If you want non-whites to live in Pittsburgh, do you have to have low-cost houses? Seems to me like it may be true, but it seems kind of a way to think about things, you know. So if you're not white, can you buy a house in Pittsburgh? Thanks very much.
So that's a good question. So so the short answer to your question is you can have more diversity without having low-income housing. And I think what we have to do is define what that actually means, right? So there's a spectrum of housing we have in Pittsburgh today. You can get a house for $200,000. You can get a house for, you know, $220,000, $230,000. They generally go very quickly. In fact, when I was looking for a house last year, I was targeting that range, and I found that when I showed up at the house, there were 20 people. And there were bidding wars that actually got the house price up to $275,000 or $280,000. So it was crazy. So what's happening is that because we have not been building homes below 350, below 300,000 in quite some time, we have a shrinking population of homes in that price range, which indirectly pushes up the price. So what I'm suggesting and what we're looking to do, in fact, and I really want to kind of give a little bit of kudos here to Bill Smith, who was on this program talking about this. You know, when I first started talking with Bill around the need for socioeconomic diversity in homes, at first he didn't fully sort of appreciate why that was needed. And then when we started talking through that, the reason we needed that is because if we don't start increasing the population of homes in that category, we will actually never be able to achieve the level of diversity that we're looking for, because we're competing against a different problem that's depressing the wages for African American Hispanics in Monroe County. So we needed to make sure we were ready. So for example, if we had more homes we're building today, if I had a magic wand and I took an entire subdivision and built homes at 300,000 or 250,000 today, we would see more diversity in those neighborhoods. And the reason being is because there's a lot more African-American Hispanic professionals that are out there that actually make incomes that are pretty decent. They're not as much as their white counterparts in the same job, but, you know, for two partners that are together, they actually can afford those type of homes. That actually won't address the lower income part, because we've never built an apartment complex that actually provides a more reasonable price home. So I think that we can achieve some level of diversity, sir, by just having houses more in the lower end of that cost structure. But in terms of actually having like an apartment or something that, or condo that actually has, you know, prices like 170, 180, 200, that's a little bit of a tougher challenge because we have limited land that's left right now.
Okay.
I have 2 points to this question. Thank you for asking it. I think the first is to say that we do have diversity of race and ability and different components in Pittsburgh. It's not to the level that anyone would want or thinks is appropriate right now. What I see is the first answer to this question is that we have racial diversity, but we don't have racial diversity in our leadership. We don't have racial diversity in any of the systems where my daughter can look beyond Kevin Beckford and see someone who looks like her. We don't necessarily have a town that amplifies those voices, that recruits those people for leadership roles. That's the first step, in my opinion, of having a more racially diverse town, is making it a more racially accepting and affirming town. But in terms of the question, it feels conflated to me again, because having low-income housing, you're conflating race with low income. And while those two things go together, sometimes I want to dispel that. There are also, we're talking about socioeconomic diversity by bringing in low income housing. And that's how I would want to talk about that.
Okay. Bernard, thanks for the phone call. Let's get Mary in Rochester next. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. So Kevin, I've heard you talk about a little bit about zoning and building more density. And in other areas of the country, they're identifying single-family zoning as being kind of discriminatory, and I was wondering if that's something you're looking at.
Can you repeat that last part? Sorry.
I was wondering if getting rid of single-family zoning for residential houses is something you might be looking at in some areas.
So when I mentioned the idea of clustered housing, it's if you're familiar with Pittsburgh, places like Wood Creek, Barker Estates is an example of what I'm talking about, where you essentially have housing that is closer together, sharing some cases that, the footprint. So therefore, the house prices are, in the neighborhood of 220, 230, which is much lower price homes and moderately priced homes. So that's kind of the intent. I don't know if we'll be able to exclude single. That's not a discussion we've heard yet, but the intent is to actually create more higher density cluster type housing type projects. Does that help?
Yeah, there are others in the country that are kind of getting rid of, basically preventing rentals. That's basically what it does. And so, building more housing is great, but with some of the housing you do have, I think it could be really beneficial to look at that to see where you can add more density to the homes that are there.
You mean in terms of building like more rental type properties?
No, I mean like converting homes into rentals.
Oh, it's interesting. So we had a conversation recently where there are a number of larger homes where people would like to convert them to sort of homes like on East Avenue where they've converted them to multi-units.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that there's a discussion starting around that. So if you live in Pittsburgh, please come out to the meeting on the 28th because I'd love to hear more about that. And because, again, we want to try to make sure that based on the needs that we're hearing that we formulate a plan that makes sense. I'm not opposed to that. That makes sense to me.
And even that's great to hear. And even building on the rental aspect, there are other places that have experimented with cooperative ownership of multifamily units, so that it creates an ownership niche in the market that's at people's level.
Okay, I like that.
And so, I'm not sure exactly what policies you would have to put in place to encourage that, but it's good to hear.
Yeah. So if you could please come out, I definitely would like to hear more about that. And the good thing is that law firm that works with us, they actually will find a way how to put that in our zoning laws.
Mary, thank you. And by the way, when and where and what exactly is the meeting on the 28th?
6 to 9 p.m. at Fire Hall number 2 in Pittsburgh on January 28th.
Okay. And the meeting is technically what?
It's to talk about the comp plan. In fact, the comp plan is actually available on a town website right now that you can look at it, download it.
The comprehensive plan?
The comprehensive plan. And the fire hall is right across from Menin High School.
It turns out we probably should have just scheduled 5 hours on housing.
All housing.
And my guests are not surprised at this as the feedback continues to come in.
Right.
Just means I won't get everything on my list. That's okay. Rachel writes to us and says, she says, I think this is crazy that the problem Pittsburgh has is to get more African-American people. Why don't we focus all of our energy on fixing the parts of our town that are already diverse and in serious trouble? I clean a lot of houses in Pittsburgh, and I can tell you, this is not a problem, not worrying about diversity here. I live in a low-income, diverse area, and no one ever talks about how to get more white people, more white, rich people in East Irondequoit to make us better. It just seems that the only people wanting this are white people who feel guilty about having so much when so many people have so little. That is from Rachel. Okay. Thank you, Rachel. Go ahead.
So, Rachel, I live in Pittsburgh. I'm a resident of color. This is an issue not for any particular race. The things we're talking about having a community that's more reflective of the broader community and the broader world that we live in, provides a better experience for our kids, for us. And quite honestly, it really speaks to the lack of equity that's been in place for so long that's led to the outcome we have today. We didn't get to 88% one demographic without it a systemic issue and barriers that allowed that to happen. And so for me, quite frankly, this is really about equity. If you get a chance, for anybody listening today, go to YouTube and look for a video of the speech by Martin Luther King called The Other America. Listen to that. And when you're done listening to it, ask yourself, how much of that exists here in Monroe County? In every part of that speech, if he replaced Monroe County with world in America, you would realize that we're still living that inequity that he talked about, and it's because we need to do the work to make this work.
I have a follow-up for both of you. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Kendra. You wanted to jump on that.
I
Go
just
ahead.
Wanted to jump for a quick second because I do I appreciate where, is it Rachel, is coming from in that there's that concept of the white guilt or the rich guilt. And I think when we're talking about war zones, when we're talking about places where humanitarian aid has been given in the past, it's been given out of charity, right? That concept of I have something, I should give it to you. And I would like for us to consider a paradigm shift, and that it's not us giving something that we have to those who don't. It's about an essential human right. And that's why this conversation matters in Pittsford, is that we're talking about having equal rights for all, equal access for all. And that's not about guilt. It's not about my guilt. It's not about a town's guilt. It's about being part of the solution. It's about part of our civic obligation. And I don't, I feel like the term guilt means that we can downplay our responsibility in assuring that we all are afforded the same rights here in our country.
I think at the heart of this is a question that I'd like both of you to hit. And again, this next question is probably its own separate discussion, but I think it matters here, particularly as we talk about changing the numbers. Pittsford's 88% white. I mean, that's a big number in a single demographic. Mm-hmm. And there's no obligation to change that. There's no law that says it must be X percent this or that. And we have self-sorted as a society in very significant ways. And I don't think Kevin Beckford and Kendra Evans would be sitting here making the comments they're making and trying to make the change they're trying to make if they didn't see a cost to us in self-sorting in extreme ways. And so I'd like to ask you both to sort of as briefly but as cogently as you can address for those who say, okay, but why does it matter? What is the cost to sorting so extremely in the way that we are?
I'll give you a very, I would say this example here should get everyone's attention. Companies that are recruiting people to come to Rochester for jobs. We lost a key talent we wanted to bring to Rochester, not because we didn't actually have a job that was good for them. In fact, we needed their talent. We lost them because the real estate agent took them to Pittsford and spent half a day giving them some, you know, here's a school, here are the different neighborhoods. And at the end, the person said, no, I don't want to, something's wrong. You guys don't look anything like America. You look like an area that's really affluent, not diverse, and I don't want my child growing up like that because they may go work in a different part of the United States and will be ill-equipped to deal with the diversity that exists.
This happened?
This actually, and by the way, this is happening more and more in the business world.
Can you name names?
So I cannot in this case without violating
my
privacy.
My job to ask you.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's a fair question. But what I'm illustrating is that what's in it for us? So if you're in Pittsford and you could care nothing about diversity because this doesn't impact you. You could care less. I'm actually okay. Here's the problem. Your home and the value of your home at some point will be affected by the fact that there won't be people here to buy that home because they may choose not to buy that your home because they don't want the value, which is missing things that are important to a lot of people today. More than half the children born in the United States a few years ago are from families of color. So eventually that's not only our students, those are also our workforce. And so what's in it for you is that you should have a community that reflects, A, our values, and B, would be attractive for people to come in. And so at some point, it won't be just because we have a high graduation rate. They're going to look at the fact that what's the social impact of my child never seeing a person of color? And I'm not the only one that wants it as a parent of color. I have a lot of my friends that are white that say, you know something, I don't want that. I want to have a more real-world experience because my child will grow up not really having that sense of what is it like to play with, eat with, and be friends with, and to realize that we're a part of what's called the human race. And the social construct that we've created has created more separation. And I'll close with this. You mentioned earlier about we've self-sorted. I would argue that that's not true. I believe that I don't know anybody in the business world that's saying, don't pay me $80,000. I'd much prefer to make $60,000. Don't pay me $100,000. I'm comfortable with $50,000. So I think that the inequities in the business world and the social and instructional institutional barriers is actually what's created this segregation we have today.
Okay, Kendra, the cost.
So systemic racism is what has segregated us, and therefore we have lived in homogenous pockets. And the concept that you need to teach those of us at the majority why diversity matters to us is the work that needs to be done in the suburbs. It's that concept of conflating any kind of difference with deficit, and that's a problem. what I do for a living is similar. I work on the Neurodiverse Hiring Initiative, meaning that I am trying to place neurodiverse job seekers into mainstream employment. Because why? Because they have exceptional technical skills. But because of a different lived experience, they can't succeed in the systems as they're set up right now. That's another whole hour for you at another time. But it's the same idea. If there are systems that are set up that segregate us, if there are systems that are set up that only a certain population can succeed in, difference most certainly does matter, and it matters not just to those who are underrepresented, but to those who are in the majority. We are doing ourselves a disservice. We're doing our country a disservice. We're doing our economy a disservice. We are failing. We are keeping structures of antiquated belief systems, of antiquated processes in place, and it's preventing us from becoming the economy, the nation, the communities of the future.
All right. Let me grab one more phone call, and then I'm going to ask Kevin to kind of set the stage for how he sees 2019 and moving forward here in Pittsford from the town board perspective. This is Robert in Fairport. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm just kind of curious what the minimum lot size is for Pittsford for like a single family home. It just seems like the town has a pretty large lot size, and it seems that there's some inconsistency in some of these rules. If you look at the new YMCA that's going up in Pittsford, they didn't seem to have any problem getting enough land for 675 parking spaces. So I'm curious to see what the minimum lot size is. Thank you.
It actually varies. If you look at the map of Pittsford, there's a zoning laws that apply and sort of, and there's, different letters for each of those areas. And so for south of the thruway, it's a lower density. So they're generally like about an acre for a house. But if you go a little bit north of that, it drops. And so part of what I mentioned earlier about looking at a remaining lot size that's left and applying new zoning laws, it's really to those properties, because that's all that's left now to be developed. And the intention is, by making it more flexible to have clustered homes, lower density homes, you could potentially have homes on maybe a quarter acre to a third, as opposed to right now it's closer to half in most cases.
Dennis writes to us and says, our son is a Marine Corps officer who was educated after age 10 in the Pittsford district. He told us when we were visiting him that he's really glad to have had the experience earlier in life living in a lower income area, because he has good experience living with a much more diverse population, and that diversity would be better for kids to have more of in Pittsford. That is from Dennis. Thank you, Dennis. So it's been a busy year in your first year. So I want to highlight four or five real quick. Just tell me, when you look back 2018, you're most proud of what? What stands out to you from your first year in office?
Probably the first thing is that it's really impactful, because we've passed a law unanimously at the town board to allow us to create what's called community choice aggregation. And that's going to allow us to aggregate all of the electrical demand in Pittsford, along with, and we did it in tandem with Brighton and Irondequoit. So we now have these three towns that we'll be able to, once we pick an administrator, to go to the energy market and bypass, RG&E and the in-between market folks that have to get a profit. And we can actually get a lower dollars per kilowatt hour for renewable energy. And we're only going to have one option, so, because we now know that when we have that much of a quantity of homes, we'll actually have a dollars per kilowatt hour that will be equal to or maybe even less than fossil fuel, which means that in the future, by mid-year this year, hopefully, all of the electricity being used in Pittsford town and residents will be coming from renewable resources. That's a huge step in the right direction. A couple of other quick things that, when I look at, when I think about social justice, one of the things that's really important to me, poverty in Monroe County is tied to what's called the working poor. We have a number of people that are working jobs with lower pay, $11, $12 an hour. And so one of the things I asked for was an amendment in our budget for this year that was approved. And I worked with Bill Smith on this and really kind of reframed the problem. I was able to get his support. And then as an entire board, we moved the minimum wage for long-term permanent part-time employees from $11 to $13.50. And my intent is, over time, is to make an installment every year and trying to move that closer to a more livable wage. But I want us to be part of a solution and not the problem of the working poor. You know, a couple of other things that, you know, one thing that's kind of neat that ties into this year, we issued our first proclamation celebrating the life and legacy of Martin Luther King in January of 2018. That actually led to the formation of a resident-led group that has put together a week of events. And so January 15th, 16th, 17th, and 19th, we have a movie, film, and discussion series on Tuesday and Thursday.
So that's coming up next week, by the way.
Next week.
So Tuesday and Thursday.
Tuesday and Thursday, we have a movie Fences with a moderated discussion by our young people at the Sutherland and Mendon Diversity and Inclusion Club. We'll moderate that discussion. Wednesday, we have a panel discussion of Pittsford graduates of color that have graduated anywhere from 20, 25, or 10 years ago to talk about their lived experience. Again, a moderated discussion by the same young people. Thursday night will be Courage to Love with Vanessa Williams. It's a movie that hardly anybody's probably seen, but it's a great movie to have a discussion around, and we'll be doing that. And so those two movies will be at the Fisher Room at the library, Pittsford Library, at 6:30. The panel discussion's at 7 o'clock at the Fire Hall number 2 across from Mendon High School. And then on Saturday, a fun event for families at 12 o'clock and 2 o'clock. Amita Whitus is going to have two sessions of African storytelling for kids and families. And so this is a...
It's two Saturdays from now.
Two Saturdays
from now. 9 days from now. Okay.
You got it. So those are kind of the highlights. I know we're short of time, so I'll stop there.
No. But where can people get more information on that? Because I know people want to...
Oh, right online. So if you go to the Talents website, Talents Facebook site, it's there. Also, you know, if you look at Kevin Beckford on Facebook, we have it there too as well. But the town website has all the information.
So the hour with you guys just vanishes, it turns out. And I hope you keep coming back and discussing these issues, because what I think really at the center of this is that change is hard.
Yes.
And that not everyone's going to agree on certain individual moments and actions, etc. But dialogue is really constructive, and I'm really glad to have you. So,
thank
Kevin
you.
Beckford from the Pittsford Town Board, Kendra Evans from Pitts Forward, thanks to both of you for having those conversations, and let's do it again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you
very much.
All right, short break, more connections coming up.